You are now listening to the Legends Lingo podcast, presented by StudentUnionSports.com. Here are your hosts, Al and Powder.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Legends Lingo podcast, episode 215, presented by StudentUnionSports.com. Make sure to check out everything on StudentUnionSports.com, from the blogs to the podcasts, everything else in between. Check out their March Madness info going on as they are putting out bets, they're putting out blogs, everything you need to know as we head into the Final Four. Powder will be joining us in a few minutes. He is running a little bit late, but we have a guest on with us tonight. It's Andrew Callahan of the Boston Herald, Patriots beat reporter, host of the Pats Interference podcast, and a contributor for NBC Sports Boston. Andrew, thank you for taking the time to join us. How are you?
Happy to be here and doing well. Thank you, Al.
Yeah, of course. No problem. So let's cut right to the chase. So you cover the Patriots for the Boston Herald. There's a lot of Patriots stuff that's gone on, Andrew. So I'm just going to fire some questions at you to kind of start. Sound good?
Fire away.
All right. So the big news that's come out is supposedly Lamar Jackson wants to be a New England Patriot. That's according to Patriots owner Robert Kraft, who trusted his really good friend Meek Mill, which is something I'll never understand, that friendship. But, you know, who am I to judge? But Robert Kraft coming out and basically saying it's in Bill Belichick's hands to make that decision. So I'll ask you point blank, Andrew, who's going to be the Patriots starting quarterback in 2023, Lamar Jackson or Mac Jones?
Mac Jones. And it's not only Bill Belichick that I believe would say no based on his history of paying quarterbacks, including Tom Brady, to Lamar Jackson. It's Robert Kraft, because the whole deal with Lamar Jackson and why he's not happily a Baltimore Raven right now comes out of the contract. And so when you're Robert Kraft, you're a part of the 31 other owners outside of Cleveland who are looking at the deal the Browns did with Deshaun Watson, fully guaranteed five-year, $230 million deals, going, why in the world did you do that? None of us can do that now. Otherwise, you set a precedent that owners dating back to the 60s and 70s have never wanted to set. Not fully guaranteed contracts for these players, more money out of their pockets at the biggest, most important, most expensive position. So even if Belichick okayed this and it comes to Kraft, he's going to say no based on the terms that Lamar has set.
So there you have it. From the Boston Herald beat reporter himself, Andrew Callahan, Mac Jones is going to be your starting quarterback in 2023, which I'm fine with. You know, and that's what bugs me. I don't know where you stand on the Mac versus Bailey debate, Andrew, but a lot of people are starting to go to the Bailey Zappe side because of three games in 2022 in which the offense was kind of, I don't want to sound mean, but dumbed down because Bailey Zappe was a rookie. And then you got Mac Jones that when he was a rookie, he had a really good year too, really good year one. And then year two, he had everything going against him. But that's another story for another day. But let's keep talking about the offense for a second. So obviously the Patriots have made some moves acquiring James Robinson free agency, acquiring Juju Smith-Schuster in free agency, Mike Gesicki. So they're adding pieces on the offensive side of the ball, obviously adding Bill O'Brien as OC and Adrian Clem as their O-line coach as well. So they're basically improving everywhere. My question to you is, what's the next big domino to fall? Is it DeAndre Hopkins? Is it Jerry Jeudy? Is it maybe signing Odell, you know, out of left field? Like, what do you think should be and can be the Patriots' next move on offense?
So just to wrap up the quarterback point really quickly, I'm fully confident Mac will be the next quarterback. I'm not going to guarantee it or report it.
No, of course.
If I did, you know, that'd be in a story at BostonHerald.com in the paper tomorrow.
Sure.
But based on the way things are with Lamar, I think you can almost safely rule him out. And honestly, the same for DeAndre Hopkins and Odell Beckham Jr. for two different reasons. Though there is some overlap here in terms of the contract, but DeAndre Hopkins, you know, is scheduled to make $19.1 million. You know, Belichick with the quarterbacks, again, has never really paid there. The highest he's gone with receivers is $11 million, and that went to Nelson Agholor. So they weren't interested in bringing Jacoby Byers back at what would be half of DeAndre Hopkins' salary, and he's expressed a willingness to be flexible and restructure. But my understanding is he would only go down to about $15 million, and that was just for Dallas. How would he feel about coming to New England with, you know, a quarterback that's frankly not as established or successful as Dak Prescott, or in a market that certainly pales in comparison when you think about the weather and just, you know, the fans and everything that goes into the Cowboys? You know, not that the fans are lesser here in New England, but you understand the appeal of playing in Dallas, right, versus Foxborough, Massachusetts.
Okay.
Odell Beckham Jr., two ACLs in the last couple of years, hasn't been the same player that everyone remembers in New York for five or six. And so if he wants a salary that's, you know, even close to 8 to 10, again, I think that's out of the Patriots price range. So of all the names that you listed, that leaves Jerry Jeudy. Now, those are conversations that I know have had. I think, again, the Patriots want this on their terms, which means certainly not a first-round pick. Second-round pick is probably out of the question. But you get to the third or fourth, and it costs that and a player. Maybe they get in because he's cost-controlled and he's younger. Do I see it happening as a likely scenario? No. But of the three, I would say that is the most likely, even if it might be something I wouldn't bet anything on moving forward.
So let's stick with Jerry Jeudy for a second, because obviously that they're, you know how it is with social media. One athlete puts something on social media and then the world goes crazy. The Twitterverse goes crazy. So Jerry Jeudy put on his, actually it was his Twitter today. I think he put like the quiet sign, and then Calvin Anderson, new Patriots offensive tackle, came in. They played together in Denver, but he did kind of something too. So I guess what my next question, basing off of what we just talked about, is Jerry Jeudy to the Patriots possible? And do you think that it's actually going to happen? Because you said it yourself, if the draft picks start going down to like that third, fourth round, then you're starting to get into like the Brandon Cooks territory for what it took for him to go to Dallas, right? Because that was a fifth and a sixth, if I'm not mistaken. So yep. with that, could the Patriots say, and will they say, you know what, a third and a fourth for Jerry Jeudy, maybe throw in like Kendrick Bourne, who's on the last year of his contract, so that way they get some sort of compensation? It's not a bad deal. What do you think?
Yeah, so I mean, the alternative is to say it's impossible, right? And I'm not going to do that, you know, with the Patriots' right. interest in that receiver market. Again, I put the percentages fairly low. The other question I would ask, and it's taken me longer than I would like to think about this Jerry Jeudy conversation, because his name has been brought up for months. I talked about it on radio, on TV, asked people around the combine back in late February. He is a cost-controlled receiver with up to 2 years left in his deal, first-round talent, ascending almost at 1,000 yards in what was the most dysfunctional season offensively in the league outside of New England last year. So why are the Broncos so compelled to unload his contract? That to me says there's something underneath the surface and not a whole lot of other people know about outside of Denver. Is it baggage with Jeudy? Is it friction with the new coaches? Does Sean Payton just think he sucks? I don't think it's that option, but it's something you have to wonder as the Patriots going, you know, the Broncos kick the tires and guys like Adam Thielen and Alan Lazard. So why are they doing that when you have a better player in-house who's under contract through 2024 and Jeudy? I don't know. Maybe the Patriots don't care, but I would certainly want to know the answer before you commit to a player like that, give up the draft capital. Like you mentioned, a player who, yeah, I could also see Kendrick Bourne getting traded this offseason. But the Patriots might just go, he produced like Jeudy did in 2021. And so if we bring in an offensive coaching staff that knows what it's doing, let's just keep him and run it back.
And it's funny that you mentioned that, because everyone wants the big move to happen, right? Like we've seen the dominoes fall. Even Scott Zolak on 98.5 is saying, oh, that's only one domino to fall. You know, and you're smiling because you know exactly what I'm talking about too. It's just like those pieces in place.
So let it was me ask a week ago and we've had nothing since. So exactly. I love Zolak, but my man is a talk show host, not a reporter for a reason.
I know. And we've had Beadle on this show and he's even come out and said some crazy Patriots takes. Like that's just a crazy, you know, Scott Zolak take. But anyways, so with the current pieces in place, so like I mentioned, you have Mike Gesicki, you have Juju Smith-Schuster in place, you have James Robinson in place. Do you think that if the Patriots, for whatever reason, said there's no more moves that we need to make, or you can't get Jeudy or Hopkins or another big-name receiver, is that enough to be competitive in 2023, especially in a seemingly loaded AFC East?
Competitive, sure. Contend, though, you know, for a real Super Bowl shot or to get to the AFC Championship? No. I mean, people are widely projecting them to finish fourth in the AFC East for a reason. I think, you know, again, going back to being probably the most competent organization in the division will help them, considering where they were offensively and some of Belichick's decision-making last year. But you bring an adult into the room on offense and Bill O'Brien, who knows what he's doing, not just from an entire offense standpoint, which would raise up players like Kendrick Bourne and Hunter Henry to the levels we saw in 2021, but also quarterbacks. Again, he was here coaching Tom Brady. Deshaun Watson in Houston got the best years out of him. Had Christian Hackenberg playing the best ball that he had at Penn State in that stint between, you know, before he left and obviously came back to the NFL. So O'Brien is going to elevate a lot around him, but at some point the talent is the talent. And when you look at the talent for the Patriots and the tiebreaker goes to coaching, I'm not sure we have many tiebreakers when you look at what the Jets are going to do, especially if they land Aaron Rodgers. But could they get a wild card if they stay healthy? Absolutely.
So hopefully this Patriots offense actually holds up its end of the bargain, because last year, I'm sure you watched every second of every game. It was pitiful to watch. By the way, folks, Powder has joined us. Hi, Powder.
Hey.
Hey. So we have talked about so far, Powder, Lamar Jackson. We've talked DeAndre Hopkins. We've talked Jerry Jeudy. Obviously, we just talked about the Patriots offense. So if you have a question for our guest, again, we're speaking with Andrew Callahan of the Boston Herald. Powder, if you have a question, feel free to fire away.
I mean, I'll take you away from the offense and just ask. I know, obviously, everybody knows the Patriots defense was good last year, but losing, obviously, McCourty, Hightower. Obviously, Hightower didn't play last year, but is still someone that Patriots leaned on a lot when he was healthy. Is there something else you think the Patriots need defensively?
Yeah, no question. I look at corner. You know, we talked about Jalen Mills a couple weeks ago, you know, whether, you know, he was going to come back. You know, they tell him he's going to get released. They restructure his deal and he comes back on a one-year deal. And part of that is he's going to play safety. So Mills didn't play after Thanksgiving. And when you look at that stretch, when Jonathan Jones was your number one corner and you have 5'8" Marcus Jones playing outside as opposed to in the slot, you had real issues against players like Stephon Diggs, who you're going to continue to see twice a year. Justin Jefferson, whom no one can cover, was a problem. But ultimately, those matchups, then you go to the Bengals game with T. Higgins, were a real issue. I think they need to add a corner. I think they will. It might be later than people like in the draft when we look at this deep corner class that everyone's going, Christian Gonzalez, Joey Porter Jr., Devin Witherspoon, come on down. I think it'll be later, but I think they will look to add at that position because really – the way they've decided to run it back on defense, re-signing basically everyone who's a free agent except for McCourty, they're content at those other spots. But corner is really an issue when you look at their talent, their depth, and their size.
Talk to me about Joey Porter Jr. for a second, because he's the one guy that I would love to be here in New England for a multitude of reasons. Obviously, like you said, takes care of the corner position, adds to that young corner kind of position that the Patriots are having. And just the fact that Joey Porter's son would be on the Patriots would just be a laughable headline just for years to come. So we don't know much about the draft. We're still going to be doing our research, but tell us a little bit about Joey Porter Jr. and tell us about Christian Gonzalez too. Just tell us a little bit about if the Patriots were to pick one of them, what can we expect?
Sure. So Joey Porter Jr., 6'2", length for days, incredibly physical, good tackler, played at Penn State, where quarterbacks after the first few weeks to stop looking in his direction. Only 2 interceptions, 0 the year before. So there's some questions about, you know, his production. The ball skills are there. He can be a little stiff when he transitions, you know, coming back off the line of scrimmage, but he fits the prototype of corners that fit in this kind of man preferred system that Belichick has. Again, you know, do they see value there at 14 to take a player when they've had so much success with undrafted corners? You know, you go back to J.C. Jackson, obviously Malcolm Butler, on and on and on. Maybe not. But Christian Gonzalez, if that's a player that falls to them at 14, at least from a traits perspective, is seen as the best corner of this draft. Another 6'2 player, runs in the high 4.3s, low 4.4s, also played nickelback at Oregon, where the Patriots love their defensive backs to play multiple spots. No questions about his ball skills. Quick, just incredible package. The only thing for him is, as a transfer from Colorado, how much, you know, exposure did he have against top-tier talent playing out there in the Pac-12? So right. Those are the questions there. But I think from a trait standpoint and development, if you're confident that quarterbacks coach Mike Pellegrino can kind of mold that clay and get you, you know, an above-average corner and a starter from day one, you know, it's hard to go wrong with either guy, I would think. Though my preference, honestly, guys, would be Devin Witherspoon out of Illinois, who's an incredible hitter, tremendous ball skills, speed, quickness, all that. Like, that's a guy plug and play under an old Patriots assistant, Brett Bielema, who's now the head coach at Illinois.
Okay. There you go. Yep. There you go. And out of the box, not completely out of the box, but definitely someone different that Andrew Callahan's giving us. I like it. Powder, you got anything else that you want to add?
Just kind of one last question I have is, like, special teams. Obviously, Patriots for years and years and years pride themselves on all their special teams. They're always one of the top, but one of the things everybody saw was the Bills game, letting up 2 kick returns for touchdown, just a lot of miscues with special teams. How do you think they improve that going into this season?
So I think they've already started that process, right? Like, Chris Ford comes aboard from Detroit, and before that game in week 5 when the Lions came to visit in Foxborough, Belichick's calling, this is the best special teams player we're going to play all year. And they still had 2/3 of their schedule left to go, even a little bit more. So that's a player they have a ton of respect for. Matthew Slater is back. Brendan Schooler played at a Pro Bowl level, even though he didn't get that recognition as an undrafted rookie who was ahead of Slater in total tackles on special teams last year. You throw in Cody Davis, who's 34, but, you know, Slater's shown you can play deeper into your 30s on special teams than you might expect. That's a good core 4 special teamers that'll play across every single unit. The other part about this, I think, is just a natural growth, right? Because they had 4 or 5 rookies playing on virtually every single unit last year. Schooler, DeMarcus Mitchell from Purdue, Pierre Strong had some of those mistakes in the kick return touchdowns that were allowed. All of those guys are going to be a year older, more experienced. And the last part about this is Joe Judge is going to have more of a special teams focus, as I reported. He'll be the assistant head coach, taking some of the things off of Belichick's plate, as Albert Breer first said from Sports Illustrated. But other than that, my understanding is he's going to be really working closely with Cam McCord, whose first season went great. Number 1 in DVOA in 2020. Last 2 years, not so much due to punting issues and the return touchdowns. But they're going to have a new punter. their players are going to be older and more experienced. You're bringing in talent from the outside, veteran talent. Like, if they aren't a top 10, top 12 special teams unit in 2023, this is a massive failure. And I think you'll see real change going on next season, because you're right. This was the standard for so long in New England.
Again, we're talking with Andrew Callahan of the Boston Herald, Patriots beat reporter. Andrew, last question from me. What is one move that you think is still yet to come in this free agency kind of period that no one's expecting? Now, I know a lot of people, or even a trade, because a lot of people are, like we've talked about, Lamar Jackson, DeAndre Hopkins, Jerry Jeudy, kind of all those names. But is there a move, whether it's out of the organization or inside the organization, that you think is coming next that we might not quite expect?
I would look at corner, like I mentioned. I think a trade could be possible there. You know, okay, what are the names there? Like, that depends on the level of interest. Like, on the outside, you wouldn't expect Denver to be so hot for giving away Jerry Jeudy when they could just pick up their fifth-year option come May and have the guy for the next two seasons at a good discount. So what are the teams there with corners that are either not looking to pay them at the end of the rookie deals, or just feel like they have a surplus at the position and will trade, you know, some of their strength to fill one of your weaknesses in exchange for what the Patriots have with the strength? Then you ask, okay, where's their surplus? You could argue receiver. We already talked about Kendrick Bourne. But I think if there is a move to come that will surprise, it will be via trade, because most of free agency has really dried up. You know, the draft, they always, you know, move and shake and whatnot. But even during the draft, with trades that aren't exclusively draft picks, like, you go back to Trent Brown coming here in 2018, that was a day two trade where they just get to move back or gave him up for a third or a fifth. I don't remember exactly what it was. And he was your starting left tackle for a Super Bowl run. I'm not saying there's another Trent Brown out there, but some sort of undervalued and or distressed asset within another organization that the Patriots just wait and buy their time, that might be the weekend they strike, in addition to building a good draft class, but add to the roster with another veteran via trade.
All right, last really quick question. Does Belichick trade the pick?
No, I think he takes an offensive tackle. As of right now, I'm pretty locked in. They'll take a tackle.
All right. Andrew, do you have any questions for us? It could be Patriots related, it could be anything. That we usually allow our guests to ask a couple questions, so that way they don't feel like they're just getting grilled the whole time. So fire away.
No, you're good. You guys ever been to New Orleans?
No, have not.
Oh, I got my bachelor party this weekend, so I've been bugging people. I got some best friends who are taking care of it all planned out, and I'm heading out on Thursday night, so we got plenty of things. So I don't know if you have any bars or restaurant recommendations, but that's about it for me.
Sounds good. Andrew, we appreciate your time. Hopefully we can get you back on later in the actual football season, because hopefully the Patriots will be, you know, over 500 and doing well, and then we can talk about everything they're doing well. But do you want to shout out your socials and everything before you head out?
Sure. Yeah. Anyone can find me on Twitter at underscore Andrew Callahan. The podcast is the Pats Interference Podcast. Catch me on NBC usually about once a week, the Boston Sports Tonight or Early Edition. And everything you can read is thebostonherald.com.
All right. Again, Andrew Callahan joining us. Thank you, Andrew. We appreciate your time. Hopefully we'll be in touch soon.
You got it. Sounds good, guys. Be well.
Thank you.
Thanks, Andrew. All right. Shout out to Andrew Callahan again, Patriots beat reporter for the Boston Herald. Make sure to check out his podcast, the Pats Interference Podcast, and make sure to check him out on his roles with NBC Sports Boston, as he contributes to there as well. So again, thank you, Andrew Callahan. First of many, hopefully, appearances on the Legends Lingo podcast. All right, enough football for now. Let's transition to some baseball, because guess what, Powder? Baseball's back on Thursday. I know.
I'm so excited.
Baseball is back. The Red Sox are back. And hopefully they'll be somewhat competitive.
Hopefully.
That's what we're hoping, right? Yeah. I think we've talked about it before, but I do want to bring this up again. Corey Kluber starting opening day against the Baltimore Orioles. Kyle Gibson going for the Orioles on Thursday in the opening game of the 2023 season. Do we really think this is a big deal, Powder, that Chris Sale isn't getting the ball on opening day? Because I'm under the impression that they rushed Sale back in 2022. He was set back even more. Now Alex Cora is being smart about it, and he's like, all right, you know what? We have a guy that hasn't made a lot of starts in the past 3 years. We need to bring him along slowly. He doesn't have to be the ace. We don't want to put that pressure on him. Yeah. So do you care that Chris Sale isn't starting opening day?
No, I think Kluber has proven in his career that he deserves opening day starts. And yes, obviously he didn't do that with the Red Sox, but I think that it's fine that the Red Sox are cautious with Chris Sale, because I think it's the Red Sox thinking, okay, if we want to make any run at this season to be competitive, we need Chris Sale healthy for the long term, not to start do five starts in April, and then we don't have him again till September. If we have him throughout the whole year, I think that's going to help the Red Sox a lot.
And it needs to help them, right? Because a lot of the questions are in the starting rotation. Yeah. Like, I know some people will ask about the lineup. The bullpen's made adjustments, obviously. They look like they're going to be better heading into 2023. The defense should be fine. Excuse me. But really, it's the starting rotation. Because don't forget, James Paxton, Brian Bayo, and Garrett Whitlock are not starting the season in the rotation because they are hurt right now. Looks like looks like Whitlock and Bayo should be back very, very soon, and Paxton's a wild card. So you need Chris Sale even more to kind of solidify that number two, number three role right now behind Kluber, and then hopefully guys like Pivetta, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but Tanner Houck actually step up and, you know, give them quality starts. So that's what we're hoping for. But a lot of moves have been happening, Powder, as we've been going through spring training. Spring training is officially done, and there's still some moves to be made. A couple moves that I want to talk to you about, Powder, and I just want your quick opinions on these first. Bobby Dalbec sent down to AAA along with Jaron Duran. They were both sent to Worcester. Just thoughts on those two guys not making the Major League opening day lineup.
Duran surprised me a little bit because I think his speed and everything, that you can even have that on your bench in late games, give him at bats, or if we need a pinch runner lane a game in close game, I think having him. But obviously you want a guy to get as many at bats as possible, and I think it's just one of those things where they're going to let him start the season in AAA, see how he pans out, see how he's hitting, and getting those extra at bats, because like in high school or whatever, sometimes people go down JV to get those at bats they're not going to get on varsity. Same thing with Major League and AAA. They're just trying to set him up so he doesn't just sit on the bench for the first month of the season and not be ready to go. And then Dalbec, that did not surprise me at all. I saw that coming. He started off pretty hot, but then he's just been very cold the last, I think, all of 2022. And so that doesn't surprise me. I could see them trading him for a reliever or something like that come May or June if he's not working out in the minor leagues.
So Bobby Dalbec, I don't expect to be on this team for the whole 2023 season. There's no room for him. I mean, take a look at all the positions. First base, you got Tristan Casas that's taking it over. He's on the opening day roster, obviously.
He's a favorite to win Rookie of the Year. So
there you go. Rafi Devers. You're not playing ahead of Rafi Devers. Shortstop, I mean, unless there's injuries, like, I think you're fine with Kike at shortstop. Yeah. Dalbec's not going to play the outfield because they have enough outfielders with Verdugo, with Yoshida, with Duvall, with Rob Refsnyder. Even Christian Arroyo can go out there. I know he looked bad on a fly ball in right field last year, but he can still play the position if need be. There was no room for Bobby Dalbec on this team because I'm going to tell you what, Powder. If Bobby Dalbec was actually a good MLB player, he would be starting at first base for the Red Sox, and we wouldn't even be having this Tristan Casas conversation. But because he has failed significantly and striking out so much at the MLB level significantly, both figuratively and literally, he's not on the opening day roster. Jaron Duran, it would have helped to have maybe another outfielder off the bench would have helped to have some speed. But guess what? Like you said, if he's getting at bats in Worcester and starting in the leadoff hole and playing center field every day, then get him his reps.
Yep.
But then you can bring him up if Duvall gets hurt or Yoshida gets hurt or Verdugo gets hurt or someone gets hurt, you can always bring him up, which is fine. But I really think that people aren't really surprised by this, especially the Dalbec one. The Duran one, I don't want to say is a surprise, but it's definitely like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But anyways, were there any other surprises that you saw with this Red Sox roster?
No, none that really stuck out.
All right, so let's get into opening day then. So opening day, Red Sox are taking on the Orioles. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it is a 2:10 start.
I can tell you in 1 second.
Could be mistaken. Again, the pitching matchup is Kyle.
You are correct.
Okay, Kyle Gibson for the Orioles, Corey Kluber for the Red Sox. And maybe it's the trying to be optimistic side of me, Powder. But I kind of like the Red Sox on opening day.
Right now, according to ESPN Analytics, it's 61-38 in favor of the Red Sox, percentage-wise.
And just because we can, because remember, it's legal in the state of Massachusetts now.
Yeah.
We can take a look at the sports books and we can see who's favored in the game. So according to, and I'm just using this one because I like it the most, according to DraftKings, the Red Sox are -125 favorite. The over-under is 9 runs. And the Red Sox are +155 to win by a run and a half. So I know DraftKings is based out of Boston, but I think they know something, especially when they have the brightest baseball mind in the entire baseball world and Jerry Karabas working there. I think they're smart enough to know that the Red Sox should be favored in this game. Yeah. Kyle Gibson, not a number one pitcher. I don't see why the Orioles did this, especially since they were trying to progress onward. But I think that this is going to be a fun game, and I think it's going to be a good start to the season. I got that hunch. I don't know why. I'm going to go with a 6-3 Red Sox victory in game one of 162 on Thursday.
Let's go with a 4-3 late inning win for the Red Sox. I'm not going to say walk off, but I'm going to say maybe seventh inning, they score the fourth run to give them the lead, and they hold on to win late in the game.
So I also was texting a little bit with Mass Live's Chris Cotillo, yeah. And I told him, give me a Red Sox hot take, because he unfortunately couldn't come on the podcast because he's flying home. And his take was that the Boston Red Sox will go, drum roll, 81-81. That is Chris Cotillo's hot take, which I think is fair.
Yeah. That for their division, how loaded the AL East is, I think that's pretty good going .500 when you're playing your division opponents. Like, I think it's now like 15 or so times a year. So going .500, I think, is a good thing.
I think so too. Because a lot of these sports books have the Red Sox at 78.5, 77.5. Yeah. And don't forget, this is the first season that they have to play everybody. Yeah. So again, they're going to play teams like the Pirates and the Diamondbacks and the Tigers. Try to think of other NL teams, the Reds that aren't that good.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to have to play.
And the A's who are, sorry, Dallas, but the A's who, that should be some wins for the Red Sox.
Yeah, the A's are poo-poo. Sorry, Dallas. Sorry, like 4-time Legends Lingo guest Dallas Braden. Sorry, Dallas. But this Red Sox team, I think there can be some optimism here. Because, again, guess what? They're starting to wake up to some things. Like, again, we talked about it. Jaron Durant, Bobby Dalbec, they're in Worcester where they rightfully should be. Mm-hmm. Former Legends Lingo guest Zach Kelly making the big league roster, which is cool to see.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean – What more is there to say about this team?
And even how Yoshi looked in the World Baseball Classic, he looked really good. And like you said, when he first signed, and Cora was saying he had sneaky pop, like he had one home run was in the semifinals that was a low changeup that just golfed out, and it was like, it shows, and he was a four hitter for Team Japan. Like Team Japan, who won it, who went undefeated, is not going to put some scrub in the four hole.
Right. He also had his first home run of the spring, I believe, the final game of the spring against the Braves off Charlie Morton. And that thing was a tank. That thing was absolutely crushed. So, again, I like Yoshida in this lineup. Maybe he can be a protector for Devers.
Yeah.
You know, so that way Devers doesn't get pitched around as much. But we'll see what happens game one on Thursday. But I'm excited. I know you are, Powder, as a fellow baseball guy. Like, I'm excited to see what happens.
Yep.
We'll move into a little bit of basketball, a little bit of hockey. But first, Powder, do you want to tell us about our good friends at A&B Kitchen and Bar?
Of course. Like I talk about every week, the Legends Lingo podcast is sponsored by A&B Kitchen and Bar and A&B Burgers. A&B Kitchen and Bar is located in Boston, Massachusetts, right across the street from the TD Garden. It's the best spot to meet up before or after a Bruins Celtics game or concert, wherever may have you at the TD Garden. go to the A&B Kitchen Bar. If you don't have tickets to that Bruins or Celtics game, especially the Bruins who are absolutely buzzing right now, just go there, get the atmosphere of being right at the Garden, but not actually in the Garden. They have fresh food. They have locally caught fish, clams. They have meatloaf. They have burgers. Whatever you want, they'll have. They have really good selection of draft beers. They're all local craft beers. They have a lot of wine. And whatever you want, A&B Kitchen Bar will have. And when you go there, tell them the Legends Lingo Boys sent you.
Shout out to our friends at A&B Kitchen and Bar, both in Boston, Mass. And Beverly, Mass. Both fine establishments, great locations with fantastic ownership and even better times expected ahead. All right, let's talk a little bit about the Celtics and the Bruins real quick. I'm going to ask you one simple Bruins question, Powder. And this is a very simple question for guys like you and me that are casual hockey fans.
Yeah.
If the Bruins don't win the cup this year, is it a colossal failure?
I know you've asked this on a few episodes that the season has gone on and the Bruins keep just rolling right along. And as much as I want to say, yes, it will be, the casual hockey fan in me from what I know from hockey is it's one of the toughest playoffs in all of sports. Every series you see, doesn't matter if it's 1-8 or even 1-2, like doesn't matter the seedings, they go 6 or 7 games and they're constantly very tight series no matter what. And I don't think it, like, I think if they get bounced in the first round, I think that's a colossal failure and it will look really bad on the score. But I think if they make it far to either the Eastern Conference Finals or even the Stanley Cup Finals and they lose a tight series where they're in the whole series, they just get beat, I can't say it's a failure because I think hockey is just the toughest sport to win in their playoffs. But obviously how the Bruins are playing, it would suck to see them lose in the playoffs.
Obviously, yes, it would suck to see them lose in a playoff series. I think if they don't, I think you hit the nail on the head. If they get bounced in the first or second round by a team like the Rangers or even like Toronto or something like that, then yes, that's a colossal failure. I think you need to get out of the East. If you get to the Stanley Cup Finals and you lose to like a Colorado or you lose to like an Edmonton or something like that, then fine. But at least you got there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, one team just gets hot in the series and then they end up winning. Like, it is what it is. But, I mean, I want you to think about this. The Bruins win on Saturday against the Tampa Bay Lightning at home. They then go to Carolina where they haven't won in Carolina, Powder, since, ready for this? In Carolina, since 2019.
Jeez.
Just in Carolina, not against the Hurricanes in general, but in Carolina, in that building. They go in there without Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, and Hampus Lindholm, and they win in a shootout. And they win.
Yep.
That's when you know, okay, there's something really cool happening here.
Yep.
I mean, if they win 7 of their last 9, they beat the all-time points record. I don't think they're going for that. But still, as we're recording, and the Bruins are going to be playing in about half an hour from when we're recording. So we're recording on Tuesday, March 28th. They're at 6:35 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Bruins are going to be playing the Predators soon. They probably won if you're listening to this. Hopefully I didn't just jinx that. But before that game, the Bruins were 57-11-5. 57 wins, 11 losses, 5 overtime losses.
That's unfriggin' believable.
It's crazy. That's 119 points. And they already have the Atlantic sewn up.
Yep.
So now, if they wanted to, they could rest guys for the last 9 games. I don't think they're going to do that because I don't think they want to go into the playoffs, you know, on a cold streak.
Yeah.
But I think that they're going to be careful with minutes with guys like Bergeron and Marchand and stuff like that. If they can get them a game off, get them a game off. So I think we're in agreement. Eastern Conference Finals at the absolute worst.
Yeah.
Worst case scenario. Stanley Cup Finals loss.
Yeah.
Realistic expectation. What do we think they do?
Realistically, I do think they win the cup. I really do. I think they're the best team in the NHL, the most complete team. The goalie's playing the best. I just can't see them losing to anybody. Like, it'll be tough if they play like Edmonton, who McDavid can win you a couple games himself by scoring three goals himself. So it's tough, but I still can't see them. I think they're too complete top to bottom.
I do too. I think that they are one of the few teams in hockey that can put out four really good lines. I think, like you said, Ullmark and Swayman are a great goalie duo.
Yeah.
And you're tougher now than you were earlier in the year by adding guys like Orlov and Garnett Hathaway and Tyler Bertuzzi. I think add a level of toughness that this team needed to get.
Mm-hmm.
And now they got it. So Eastern Conference Finals at the worst, Stanley Cup Finals. I think they should win the Cup too. I think they should. Have Bergeron and Krejci ride off into the sunset and then let the retooling. I'm not going to call it a rebuild because it's not a rebuild. But let the retooling begin. I put that in air quotes, retooling. All right. Any other Bruins thoughts before we get into the Celtics, before we get out of here?
Nope.
Okay. Celtics. They're starting to get back on track. Excuse me. The Boston Celtics are back on track. I was worried about them a little bit. Powder was worried about them a little bit. But it looks like they're back on track. Winning their last couple of games, and I just got to go back and get the scores here because the scores are unbelievable. They beat the San Antonio Spurs by 44 points, 137-93. They beat the Pacers by 25 points, 120-95, both home games. And then they beat the Sacramento Kings on the road, 132-109. The Celtics did go 4-2 on their West Coast road trip, dropping two games by a combined 3 points to two really not great teams in the Rockets and the Jazz, and I think that's why I was worried. But one thing I want to talk about real quick, Powder, that's bugging me, and I think I talked about this last week. If not, I'm going to bring it up again. But if not, I'm going to say it. People need to stop blaming Joe Mazzulla. They need to stop doing it. Joe Mazzulla will not be the reason that this team loses in the playoffs. It's this core. And now I'm starting to remember. I did talk about it, but I just want to bring it up again. This team is better than they were last year because they've already surpassed their win total from last year with seven games remaining. They're going to, at the worst, get the two seed, which it stinks, but Milwaukee, what can you do when Milwaukee has a 17-game win streak in the middle of the season? You can't beat that, you know? The Celtics schedule as it remains, as we're recording, they're playing the Wizards tonight. Thursday night, they got the Bucks in Milwaukee. That could be the game that decides the one seed, because if the Celtics win, they own the season series, and then if they get tied with Milwaukee, they overjump them because of the head-to-head.
Yep.
So you have the Wizards, the Bucks on the road. You got the Jazz at home. You got the 76ers after a nice long layoff. Let's see, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. 3-day layoff after the Jazz game. Then you're home against the Raptors for two and home against the Hawks for your final game of the season. So this season is going to be over in about 2 weeks. And the playoffs are going to start. So similar to the Bruins question, Potter, I'm going to ask you this. Now that the season's wrapping up, because it's 75 games in, there's only seven left, what are your realistic expectations for the Celtics as they go into the playoffs?
I think they're a team that's going to make a run. I think they could make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. I think they're good enough to make it back to the finals, but just some of their inconsistencies scare me a little bit, where yes, they can be. They showed the first half of the season they were the best team in the NBA, but then for about a month or so, they're shown that maybe they're just okay. And that scares me, because even if it's two games in a row where they just play okay to a Milwaukee or something like that, they're going to lose both those games. Now they're down 2-0 so quick, and that's just such a tough hole to climb out of against a team that good. But my realistic expectations is they make it to Eastern Conference Finals but fall in seven games with Milwaukee.
Okay. I'm going to go a little different. I think they make it back to the finals. I do. Because I think they can play with Milwaukee. No, I don't think they can play with Milwaukee. I know they can play with Milwaukee. They blew them out on Christmas. They lost in Milwaukee when they didn't have basically their whole starting lineup. And they lost in overtime. Or they lost in like the last minute. It was a very close game. I think the Celtics are the most complete team. They're the most talented team. Especially when you have a guy like Malcolm Brogdon coming off the bench. And when their starting five is healthy, Derek White's coming off the bench. who's had a really fantastic year. And I take a look at all these other teams in the playoffs. We know they can beat Philly. They can beat Cleveland. The Knicks scare me a little bit, but I think they can still take care of business in five or six. And I think Milwaukee, if you steal one game in Milwaukee to start, you can win three games at home and win it in six and not do what the Bucks did last year and lose game six at home. So I do think the Celtics can get back to the finals. And I'll say this. If they play anybody but Golden State, I think that they can finish what they couldn't finish last year. I think they can get over that final hurdle and win a championship. But again, like you said, and I agree with this, it's all about consistencies. All about being consistent. And you know what? I think they're starting to sense that the playoffs are near and they realize they have to play their best basketball. And I think they're going to do that. Even Malcolm Brogdon said it. You know, we're aware of what's going on. I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said, we're aware of what's going on. We know we got to start to tighten it up. So they're smart. They know. Yep. They know exactly what's going on. So hopefully the Celtics will make a run too.
Yeah. That'd be a very fun June if the Celtics and Bruins are both in their finals and maybe the Red Sox can feel that momentum and roll with them.
So just to conclude everything, Patriots are still going to make some moves. Maybe we'll see some moves later toward the draft. Red Sox opening day Thursday. Powder and I are feeling a win.
Yep.
We're feeling a Bruins championship and at least a Celtics Eastern Conference Finals appearance. It's pretty good.
Yep.
And also in the World Baseball Classic, congrats to Team Japan, who beat Team USA 3-2 in the World Baseball Classic Final. Shohei Ohtani striking out Mike Trout to end the game. Yep. Poetic ending. And then before we sign off, I just want to take a moment of silence for the Covenant School shooting in the Green Hills neighborhood in Nashville, Tennessee. Tragic accident where six people were killed. It was a private Christian school, pre-K through sixth grade. Three adults, three children, unfortunately, died. And I just want to – it hit me because it happened at a school, obviously, as all of you know. I am a teacher, and that it hits home for me. So just a moment of silence for those who lost their lives in that. Thank you. So hopefully the world can be a better place because we need it to be a better place.
Yes, we do.
And sports is a great distraction for what's going on. And this world is tough. Something needs to change. But anyways, rate and subscribe to the Legends Legal Podcast on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, Anchor, YouTube, everywhere where we are. We're not on YouTube, but you know what I mean. Just subscribe everywhere. Again, studentunionsports.com. Check out everything that's going on. Final Four, UConn, Miami, San Diego State, Florida Atlantic. Powder, who do you like to win it all?
UConn. I think UConn's going to win it.
I do too. I like UConn. I think they're playing the best. I think they have a really good route. I think they're playing Miami. And then they play the winner of Florida Atlantic and San Diego State. So we'll see what happens.
I honestly think whoever wins UConn, Miami is going to win it.
I do too. But hey, San Diego State, Brian Dutcher, who's a really good head coach. And then Florida Atlantic that's riding the wave, being a Cinderella team. But anyways, we'll be back next week. Maybe some big news will happen, maybe not. But we'll have some Red Sox to talk about because we'll have about a week's worth of Red Sox games. For Tom Powder Cadmus, the ever handsome, the ever wonderful Tom Powder Cadmus, I'm your host, Alan Hegan. Thank you for watching episode 215. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you next week for episode 216.
Yes, sir.